to the Adaptive Intelligence Podcast. I'm Russell Rogers, founder and CEO of Adaptive Intelligence, former Special Operations Combat Medic, and alum of numerous universities from Stanford to Oxford. I love learning with others and helping them achieve success and fulfillment. Join us as we connect kind, curious, and collaborative people through conversations that help us get to know each other better. Let's get started.
Hi, I am JM Piquet, your host for today's episode, where we're going to speak with Ashok Krish, founder and CEO of Kaizen Secure Voice, and learn what makes him tick. I hope you enjoy the conversation.
Ashok, this is going to be really easy because we would like to know you better. So we want to know things about you. And first things first, we would like you to explain in your own words or in your own stories who you are for just people to understand a little bit more about your experience and your life.
Sure. So my name is Ashok Krish. I'm basically from south of India, born in south of India. Migrated to US in 95, mid-90s. I was working for Xerox when I came to this country. And when I told them that I'm going to put in my papers, they said, hey, Xerox headquarters is in US, so you should come and join us here. And I did not discuss with them what is going to be my position or responsibilities. And they said New York. And I said, okay, I'll take it because I was coming to New York. My wife had a job with Chase Manhattan, JP Morgan Chase these days. So came here, I came to know that going to be manager emerging markets. But also I came to know that these emerging markets were China or Nairobi in Kenya. So I said, hey, coming all the way from here, I just got married, and it doesn't make sense for me to spend my time in China or Nairobi for 6 to 8 months in the year. So that gave me a window of opportunity to join my friends, two friends who started software product company. They were just fresh out of college, master's, and they offered me half the salary of what I was getting in Xerox, but they also offered me a percentage of company. So that actually changed my whole life, career path, actually. So I took that opportunity, even though it was less than what I was earning. Money was not the criteria, but I wanted to get into the software and IT field, which looking at it from where it started, I think I made a right decision. So things were going well, 98. So I was the heading marketing sales. 98, the product that we built, even though we didn't want to sell, but the angel investor put pressure on us to sell. And most of the fun was happening in the West Coast. East Coast, the investor was a civil engineer. So he said, hey, you know what? If somebody is giving you 2x, 3x, take it, man. Take it and, you know, give me my money back types. Like, so though we didn't want to sell it, but we sold that product to Travelers Insurance, which was at that time part of, I think, something to do with American Express. So since then, we didn't want to get into Y2K because that was a very low tech. But we were doing some consulting jobs for the next 2 years. And then we landed a project for a bank, a large bank, to build their portal. It's a $60 million project. And we had So we were only part of technology. So we were only asked to build what the business, which came from their side, to sit with them and work with them to build that business flow in the portal. So that was going very well, 20 million burn, 25 million burn. But then, unfortunately, we were a few blocks away from World Trade Center. And when World Trade Center happened, pre-9/11 days, the data center had both backup servers and the servers in the same data center. There was no cloud, nothing those days. That was it. That was the end of that story because we were not able to go to the office for next 4 to 6 months, 4 months or 4.5 months to be precise. And then even when we went there, we were told that we cannot touch anything. It was a 6-inch dust and all that stuff, they said, you know what, everything needs to be put in a barrel and destroyed. That's it. Yep. So we were minus zero overnight. My friends, my partners, they said, let's close this and let's go our own way. But I decided to take this up. Like I said, no, let me. We didn't do this. We didn't create this mess. So our lawyers were saying there could be liability issues. I said, no problem. I'll take it up. I'll fight this out. So I took over this company with telling them that I will pay them maybe $100,000 each when I start making money, whenever I start making money. So technically,
and you started from scratch.
Scratch, yes. So because we had nothing, we had lost everything technically. So what we did is, what I did is I took these resources because I know these resources were high-end resources. I had picked them up and the technology was also very nascent and people were people wanted these type of people to build their own. So I went into services. I took these guys, I told them, I would committed them that maybe I will not be able to pay full salaries immediately, but then I'll take care of it. Take care of all your expenses, number one, and number two, whenever we start making money, I'll make sure that you'll get whatever I owe you. They also had no choice at that point of time, so most of them agreed, almost 98%, only a couple guys left. And 2003, I paid the money to my partners and I took over this company and changed the name to Kaizen Technologies. Kaizen is something which in Xerox, I had attended this Kaizen training in Fuji Xerox. And I got fascinated. Continuous gradual improvement, right? So you can apply this anywhere. So I said, you know, my business is also going to be, my life as well as my business is going to be Kaizen. So that's how I built, I took over and changed the name to Kaizen in 2003. And then most part of the time I was into services, but tried couple products like Zen Eagle, which was basically monitoring. While Cisco's and all had software to monitor 1,000 servers, 2,000 servers, there are a lot of small players like 20 servers, 15 servers, they couldn't afford Cisco. And right, so I said, let me be in this market. So we built Zen Eagle, and that went very well. It was sold again to a guy who does who takes up small works, server monitoring and outsourcing work. And he said, this will be very useful for me, and I will use it in a way, because we built this for servers to monitor in laptops and computers, but people started asking for mobile. I didn't want to keep spending money on that, so I gave that away. So it's 2017, I attended a voice conference in NJIT. One of a professor friend asked me if I'm free. It's a half day ending with lunch. I said, okay. I didn't have much to do on that particular day. So I went to attend this voice conference. And there were prominent guys like managing director of voice for AWS. And then there was also, I think, senior vice president or vice president from Alexa, Google and Alexa, both voice guys were there. So I took, I spent some time and I thought that this could be an interesting area to invest my time and money on, if at all. But I didn't have the competency. So I was looking for people if I could hire. There are not many people in voice technologies those days. Yes, they were in Microsoft or in Nuance or in IBM, and they said, yeah, sure, interesting, we could build something on that, but right now I'm getting $250,000 per annum. So I was not willing to spend that much to take a risk when I really, it's from the scratch, right? I didn't know anything, so I was doing my whole homework on my own. Finally, what I did was, when I attended the second conference, I said, you know what, this is going to be big, because it was a two-day conference with 1,000 people. And it's growing and people are all interested. So I said, you know, this is huge. Within 1 year, it's going growing this big. Something, if these many guys are looking at it, it's a good area to be in. So I started looking for some small companies that is working on this, either partner with them or, you know, get buy some stocks in that and start working with them types. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I found a company which was not doing that great in India, which is an IVR company, Interactive Voice Response, called Lattice Bridge. So I was talking to these guys, and then I was introduced to the main investor. It's a VC, big VC. Today they are PE also. So I got in touch with them. They had invested around $2 million into this company. I negotiated $250,000 for a majority stake, and I took this company, not with the intention of running that company, but I took the whole team from that company, and I started KSV, Kaizen Secure Voice. So at that point of time, we did not know what we were going to build in voice, but my third conference actually gave me the idea of why I should be in voice and what I should be doing in voice. Mm-hmm. Because one of the customers, one of the app builder, a lot of people were building app to help Google Bot or Alexa Bot, which was again low tech. Anybody can build an app for that. You know, hey, switch a light, switch the light, open the garage, things like that. You know, through voice bot and through Alexa or through Google. But there was a flaw there, which means there was a problem there that I could go and stand outside a house and say, hey, Google, open the garage. Or, hey, Alexa, open the garage, and it'll open it for me. Mm-hmm. Right? So the problem was that there was no security for the voice. While the bot is able to understand what you're saying, it doesn't know who is saying that. Yeah. Right. So my solution, I thought that this is a beautiful solution to address, right?
Right.
Securing people's voice.
And you're, I mean, you told us about a story of more than 20 years in very few minutes. So that's impressive. Yeah. A bumpy road, I would say, a long journey and a bumpy road sometimes. But in a nutshell, what Kaizen Voice is doing, what is the product why are you better than the rest of the market? Because you have an advantage now. What is Kaizen Voice?
Got it. So that's where we are starting now, right? So all this story was to this point. From here, the real Kaizen Voice story begins. Right, so we knew that we were going to solve knowing who this person is rather than knowing what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so we wanted to secure the voice. So we started looking for, of course, was there competition? Yes, there was very few competition. Nuance was one of the major competition. So what technically Nuance was doing is any company that is building something in voice, they were buying it and killing it, so buy to kill types, right? So, but since they, I think by that time they were negotiating with Microsoft, which of course Nuance got bought over by Microsoft for $19 billion. So they were probably not interested in what we were doing and all. But we had two choices, either to work with somebody who already has this technology and build solutions around it, or build our own. So we initially, first we thought, let us see why voice is not a very popular technology when it, this is authentication, right? Biometrics, I'm trying to authenticate a person. So there was already facial was coming up. Finger was popular, facial was just
arriving
there in that horizon. So I said, why are people talking about finger and face, not voice? So there was many flaws in that. The first flaw was that you needed to be an English literate. In sense, they give you a sentence in English. You have to read that to register yourself. And then you have to come back and read the same sentence to authenticate yourself. That was the technology when I started, right? So I said, this is, so only the audience or the users could be only English speaking or English written and spoken people, right? Even English speaking guys cannot, because they should know to read also. So I said that we should first make sure that we remove this text and language barrier, English language and text.
Mm-hmm.
So we were successful in removing this barrier. So my product, you our product, you can just go talk in French, anything you want. Hey, the weather is so beautiful out today, and I would love to go for a walk in French, right? And then you come back. You don't have to remember what you had spoken. You're registered. As soon as you speak for 15, 10, 15, or 20 seconds based on the length of the voice. We look for 7-second voice length. That's it.
And then if I understand it correctly, what you mean is, besides understanding what you're saying, the system and the product, what it's doing, is knowing that it's you saying that. So identifying you just like it was your fingerprint or face or so on. And then it grants you access to any system so you can integrate these biometric measurement into any kind of device system to use this instead of any other measure.
Yes. So there is your 75% right. 25% is it doesn't need to understand what you are saying, because the technology what we have adopted is it is not based on the vocal voice. So what my engine does is from your voice it extracts characteristics of your voice.
Okay, then your only interest is the voice, not what you're saying.
Yes. So even if you have cold, cough, whatever language you are speaking, it doesn't matter.
Just like with the face recognition, it doesn't matter whether you're wearing glasses or a beard or whatever.
Same thing. So the same, basically, it's all the same. All biometrics use the same analogy or a technology, right? So that is what was our first barrier that we broke. We have few patents. We had two patents and few patents pending. Okay. And then the second issue that we found out was that if you register yourself through a mobile phone, even today, 80% of the technology, voice technology that's in the market, is even today they still haven't been able to break the barrier of what you call it, like a channel barrier, right? So if you register yourself through a mobile phone, you have to come through the same mobile phone to authenticate yourself. But whereas what we broke that barrier. We said, we should be able to, what if I don't, if I'm not carrying my cell phone or I'm driving and I cannot use my cell phone, can I authenticate through my speakers in my car, or I'm working on my laptop, can I just switch on the speaker and authenticate myself for in a bank or something? So that is a barrier that we broke, second one. So we are channel agnostic, which means you can register yourself in mobile phone, any speaker. Right, your laptop, your car speaker, anything. And you can come back and authenticate yourself through any channel.
Okay.
It doesn't matter which channel you're using.
Nice. And even though it seems impossible to do anything else than these, because, I mean, it's a project that it's probably taking you a lot of time and a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. You're also a serial entrepreneur, just dealing with other projects, developing, helping, financing, investing in some other ventures.
Correct.
So you're working with entrepreneurs at the same time.
Exactly. Yes. So we the whole investment for this last 5.5 years, we've been working on it. As I said, we started with an engine which we thought we will build applications around it. We spent 8 months. We figured out that this was from a university in Poland. We took the license, perpetual license, paying some $20,000, $25,000. But it didn't work, because when we asked for some changes, it took forever for them to get to us. And we cannot commercialize if that is the issue there. Like, so we started building it on our own. So we own this engine now. So we don't have to. Apart from this, all these investments, of course, is coming from my services, which I also am the president of that company. I own it, me and my wife, obviously. So we, whatever we generate profits and revenues, we pump it into this new product. And then we have invested into other products, say cybersecurity products, and then nursing. So these are the different. I'm a partner in that. I have some investments, so you make some money from there also. Yeah.
So you've been developing, and you had just quite a few successful exits over this journey.
Correct.
Is there any ingredient or ingredients you can identify in successful ventures or projects or entrepreneurs. So what is that you're looking for when you put your interest in a project?
Sure. Yeah. So first is entrepreneurship is all about taking risk, right? We would be looking at somebody, if I want to invest money, there are a lot of things that you look at. But the first thing is somebody who is willing to take the risk. Obviously, if he is starting to build a product or something, he is taking a risk, right? So that is the first trait of any entrepreneur, right? So from there, the other thing that I look at is what problem he's trying to solve. There's so many ideas people come up with, but they don't know what problem they're trying to solve, which could be a good idea. But then if you don't know what problem you're trying to solve in the market, it doesn't make sense. And that problem that they are trying to solve is something which is a serious problem.
Just wanted to have another perspective of you. Russell just told me that we needed to speak about your work traveling through Africa with military escorts, right?
Yeah, so this is before Kaizen Secure Voice. Before once I finished that, when I came back, that is when this Kaizen Secure Voice happened. My friend who was working for, he was not working directly, he was a contractor for US Department of Defense military. In Kuwait, when the first Iraq war with Kuwait broke out, right? So he was a small-time gym instructor. So gym basically starts, he was also a military guy, but from India. So it's only from 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. And then it's hot. Kuwait is hot, right? It touches 50 degrees centigrade, which is 120 common any day. And then it starts again from, say, 5 o'clock, 4 or 5 o'clock, to 9 o'clock. So whole day in between, he didn't have anything to do. So he just invested on two trucks. And he said, I'll help you guys move houses or vegetables or meat, whatever, you know, something he wanted. So because he had this 7-8 hours, he's not doing anything. So he said, let me do this. So if one truck he used to drive it itself, the second he had a driver. And then this war happened, and then U.S. military army was looking for somebody who could help them with moving the supplies and things like that. So from that two truck, U.S. Army helped him get almost 120 trucks. Mm-hmm. And he had people, drivers from all over the world. Basically, Indians drivers didn't want the risk, but then Pakistani, Ghanaians, Nigerians, all these guys were open. Willing to work for the Kuwait. Kuwait dinars are most $120 for a dinar or something like that. It used to be those days, right? Even now it is, you get a lot of money for a dollar. You could get a lot of dollar for one Kuwaiti dinar. So he had sent a friend of his to meet me. One of the supervisors for his thing, he said, hey, he's coming to meet his brother. Can you help him show him New York City? I said, okay, I'll do that, right? So because it was Saturday, Sunday, so I said, okay, I'll take him around, no problem. But why can't he see it himself? He says, no, he's very important for me. Take care of him. He said, I'll pay you or not, but don't worry. I took him around. He said he's going to meet his brother, who is a professor in Chicago, University of Chicago. He said, you should also come and meet him. He's contesting. He's going to contest for president of Ghana. Oh. So I said, wow, he's a professor here. Oh, he said, yeah, we have dual citizenship. And he was a professor in Ghana before he moved here. A student of him, he's also basically Obama. Mm-hmm. And he's also encouraging him, senator at that time. So we said, okay. And my friend also insisted that I should go and meet him if I have time. So I said, okay, I'll take the time because it was interesting to meet a presidential candidate. And he asked for some help. We helped him. He won the presidency. Obviously, we were VIPs when we went there. We were state guests, not just VIPs. We were state guests. So mm-hmm. car comes to the aircraft to take us into the city with all those lights and motorbikes and all that stuff, right? So interesting. So he said, hey, why don't you invest? I know you're a businessman. Why don't you invest in Ghana? We'll make sure that it'll help us as well as you can help. It can help you also. Like, so we didn't know what to do, but the person who was there next to him was a mining minister. He said, you should invest in mines. A lot of gold here still. It's not been exploited fully. It used to be called Gold Coast earlier. Mm-hmm. But De Beers and all these guys, Canadian mines are making a lot of money. I think they're doing well. Otherwise, they wouldn't be expanding. So we invested, but we were not making much money there. We were we invested in 4 mines. Mm-hmm. And we were doing the alluvial mining, which is dig 10 feet and you hit a part of alluvial soil, you wash the soil and you mm-hmm. get from that, right? So all the effort, when we washed a ton of that soil, we were getting 0.3 grams of gold, which is okay, but then it was really not, we were not able to cover our costs technically. So we told him, like, in fact, we were having dinner at his house and his wife was asking, how is your business going and all. So he said, we're not making money right now. It's been 6 months, 7 months. We don't know if we can make. Mm-hmm. So she told her husband, hey, what are you? You're making your friends lose money. So he immediately at that point of time, he spoke to the mining ministers and then he called the president of DRC, mm-hmm. Democratic Republic of Congo. And he said, hey, my friends are interested in gold mines. Can you help them? He said, send them across, your brothers or my brother also. So he said, my brothers, so he said, your brother is my brother, so send them in. So we fly to Kinshasa and then we start making money. But then there in the east coast of DRC, the government doesn't have much control. Mm-hmm. Rebels have more control. They do more mining than the government. So we had to either work with the rebels or we have to make sure that they don't. So that is when we needed to have our own commandos or personal security, then police, and then the military with the submachine guns go with us wherever we go when we go into the mines.
Wow. Those are amazing stories, Ashok. Thank you so much for sharing. Last but not least, you're hosting some of the meetups we're having at the community, Adaptive mm-hmm. Intelligence Community. In New York. So tell us a little bit about the community and the meetups.
Yeah, so me and Russell we did a course in Yale. So we are Yale LMs. He reached out to me saying that he's building this community. And if you see, there's a need for this community. So there are a lot of LinkedIn type of things, there are a lot of clubs, there are a lot of, but they all are business oriented. They all look at how to make money out of you, mm-hmm. right? So when Russell told me about this adaptive intelligence community, and then I saw that this could not only help me build or even, because these are all guys, mostly guys who've been an entrepreneur or guys who are subject knowledge experts in their own field. Mm-hmm. Right. So if I run into any issues, I can actually use this community to help me out. Right. So it's actually for whatever membership, what a small thing, I get value for what the money or the time I spend with this community. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was very interesting and it was high time that intellectuals had their own community. Most of these communities have a flavor of intellectuals, but it is a business technically. Whereas this definitely could be a business, but then it has everything that you could look for. When I hit a roadblock, I know I can go and get a solution.
100%. Ashok, I don't want to take too much time. I think you're busy. You're starting your day probably.
Yes.
So thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation. And hopefully we can meet in person very soon.
Definitely, yes. So looking forward. Thanks for your time too. And then anything for the adoptive, I mean, our community, I'm always there.